What do we got, man? What do we got going on here, Omar? You said the players that need to step up and have a Patrick Paul-like jump.
Yeah, if you look at this roster, last year was a season where you took a lot of lumps for some of the young players. You were playing Kenneth Grant early. You were playing Jordan Phillips early. You were playing Jonas Savonija early. You know, you're playing Jason Marshall Jr. early. And you know, they weren't necessarily primed or in position to play and play well at a high level. And really, a lot of players on the team credited a lot of the team's early struggles in the season to those rookies and the growing pains that they were experiencing. And then when they got better, you saw the team start to improve, particularly the defensive tackles, because once we got past the Cleveland game and the Dolphins were able to begin to stop the run, I believe it was Charlotte where they had a respectable showing. Mm-hmm. The season got better because the defense, you're not going to have a good defense if you cannot stop the run. So when they got better, the team got better. And my argument for a lot of people who have said to me that Dolphins will not have a good team, I'm like, you don't know that. While it does look like a dollar store Dolphins roster. And did you know dollar store's gone up in their price to $175 now? They were initially $125, and now some items are in the store at $175. But that's a side note. I say and give a perfect example of a young player that drastically made a significant improvement in Patrick Paul. Mm-hmm. You know, when we looked at Patrick Paul as a rookie, he played about less than 400 snaps. He filled in for Teron Armstead for a couple of games. He played a little bit of right tackle. And there was mixed reviews. He gave up about 3 sacks. You know, the film was inconsistent. The play wasn't steady. But what Patrick Paul did is in year 2, in the offseason, he lived in that facility. He turned probably about 10 pounds into muscle. And when we saw him at training camp, I mean, Patrick Paul was beating players down and taking names. We had joint practices where veteran established $100 million pass rushers were basically coming up to Patrick Paul and be like, yo, you're a different guy. You're going to be pretty good in this mm-hmm. league. And then we saw the season that he had. I would tell you, outside of Devon Achane, I don't think there's anybody on the Dolphins roster that has a brighter future than Patrick Paul. If he replicates what he did last season, we're talking about a player you're going to have to pay $100 million to next offseason.
That'd be a good problem to have.
Absolutely. It's a good problem to have, especially with a left tackle. But I've got a list of people where if they take that Patrick Paul jump, you could have a winning season. You could develop, you can put a team on the field that can be very competitive moving forward. The list.
When you say winning season, and I want to get to your list. I want to get caught up here though, Omar, before we get to your list. But when you say winning season, what exactly do you mean by winning season? Because I don't want to get people all riled up here and excited this morning. If you're, you know, you're thinking 4 or 5 wins is a successful year for this team. I don't know what the ceiling is for this team. To be quite honest, I think we need to get into camp and really see this thing start to come together before you can really make any sort of major judgment, right? I think it's borderline impossible at this point to know what to expect from this team, but what would you think is the ceiling? Like, if you had to guess today, Omar, what is the ceiling? And then I guess, what is the floor?
Yeah, I definitely think the ceiling is 10 wins.
10 wins?
Yeah, absolutely. If the players I got here can take their game up, turn the volume up about 2 notches, you can be a pretty good team.
I mean, 10 wins is a really, like, that's a pretty good season by any standards.
I mean, Ryan Fitzpatrick led the 2019 Dolphins to 5 wins, and they weren't even trying to win games.
Well, the team was. The coach was.
The coach was.
The office maybe wasn't.
The coach was.
Do you think this roster is better than that roster?
Yeah, this roster is definitely better than that roster. But then keep in mind that roster self-sabotaged themselves by trading away all their players during training camp and during the exhibition season and before the season started. You know, Kenny Stills, Kiko Alonso, Raekwon McMillan. You know, that roster self-sabotaged themselves.
Can't you say the same thing about this roster though? Tyreek Hill, Jalen Waddle, Bradley Chubb, all getting sent away.
That was a purge done financially.
What's their win total at 4.5 games? Is that what the Vegas? Yeah. So they would have to double to get to Omar's ceiling. Where is the floor though for this team though, Omar? What if things don't go well?
I think every team in the NFL should win 4 games. The league and even the commissioner of the NBA talked about it recently. Where he basically said the NBA's aspirations are to get like the NFL, where basically everybody feels like they've got a chance. And in every season, even your worst team should win four games if they're actually trying to win games. And let's be real about it. There are some teams that are not trying to win games. If I'm an Arizona Cardinals fan, I know my team is not trying to win games. My team is strategically sabotaging my, So
yeah, but I also think the NFL is different in a sense that, like, I don't think players care as much where they go. I think it's like you're going to take the biggest contract. I don't think it's more like, all right, I need to play in a big market because the NFL is not a star-driven league. Like, true. Giannis basically gave him to, you know, Giannis said Milwaukee, this is where I want to go. Like, I want to go to Miami or I want to go to Boston. Like, usually you see a player like, I want to get out of here and go to a better situation. Like, that's
or they want to go to a good program.
You want to go to a good team, right? Yeah. Because everyone wants to
nobody
win.
Nobody likes to lose.
Everybody likes to win. But everybody in that league, and they should, by the way, go and get as much money as you can, as much guaranteed money as you can. The NBA contracts are fully guaranteed. The NFL contracts are not, unless you're Deshaun Watson.
A bad NBA player is making more than, probably will make more than Jordan Brooks will make during his career, which is sad and disappointing, but the reality.
Well, we're going to hit NBA free agency in 5 days, and you're going to see guys that are like the 14th and 15th guy on the bench. You're like, who is that? And he's going to sign like $100 million. Like, oh, 4 years, $100 million. It's a bargain for a guy that scores 3 points and 2 rebounds.
Austin Reeves got 185 yesterday.
Well, he's good.
But still, good. Like, that guy is making 10 times what Jordan Brooks is making. Maybe not 10, but you get what I'm saying. I think they're comparable in their sports, like in their roles.
I'm not even sure if they're comparable.
You will see some serious stiffs that are about to get some big paydays.
There's a guy in Utah I'd never heard of turning down $200 million. Like, I never heard of this guy.
No, NBA free agency is always funny because, like, you'll get the sticker shock of, like, the first few days because the money always goes up. And, then they'll start paying all these different stiffs a whole bunch of money for them to come in and bring their 3 points and 2 rebounds into the mix. Speaking of the NBA, Ira Winderman is going to join us in about 20 minutes from now. He'll join us at 9 o'clock. We are going to take a pause, get all caught up here. Omar Kelly is with us. And Omar, I want to get to your specific list. We did not get to it here. Who is the list that can get the Dolphins? Omar says 10 wins. We have an optimistic Omar here this morning. So we will get to Omar's list of Dolphins players that can step up and help power this team to a winning season when we come back on QAM. Welcome back in here on WQAM. Sun's starting to rise here on this Thursday morning here in South Florida. Hollywood Omar Kelly along here with you. Omar, let's get to that list, my man. We got Dolphins. Omar told us he thinks the Dolphins can get the 10 wins. He's on the record. You're on the record now officially with that comment there, Omar. So you are officially on the record now. Omar, if you can just unmute yourself and we will get your list here of players to watch for that can get them perhaps to it.
Listen. I don't put 10 on me. I said that they could potentially get to 10 wins. I got to see what happens. No, I'm not. I said, what's the ceiling? You asked me for the ceiling, and I said they can get to 10 wins.
Okay.
If a number of players have a Patrick Paul-esque turnaround in terms of—
Who are those players?
Stop rushing me. I feel rushed. I feel like you're putting words in my mouth, and now you're rushing me.
I may have put words in your mouth with that one. That's what I do. Go ahead, Omar.
The list starts with Malik Willis. Now, he's not necessarily a young player, and most of these players are young players. I don't have any rookies on this list because rookies are rookies. They're rookies for a reason. They don't know what you can expect from them, and it's going to be a hot mixed bag of good and bad. But Malik Willis is not a rookie. He's a four-year veteran. He started six NFL games. He's shown you a ton of upside in Green Bay, which is why he's here, which is why the Dolphins gave him $45 million in a contract. Now, if Malik Willis gives you, let's say, more than is on par with, let's say, his who's a good quarterback that he could be compared to? I don't know. I don't know. I got to think about that. He's an athletic quarterback. I don't think there's anybody that we can really compare him to in the league. But let's say C.J. Stroud. If Malik Willis gives you what C.J. Stroud did in his rookie season, you're definitely going to be in the win category a ton. He's athletic. He's mobile. He's got a strong arm. I would love to see him improve in his accuracy. And clearly he has to develop chemistry with the weaponry around him. But then on the list is Chop Robinson. If you think about it, Chop Robinson has the same athleticism and metrics as what's the pass rusher in Green Bay that came trigged from Dallas?
Parsons.
Yeah, Micah Parsons. Micah Parsons, Chop Robinson was a first round pick because he's got nearly identical metrics physically to Micah Parsons. Now, the production and on-field performance does not match up, but the athleticism does. Now, if Jeff Hafley, who had Micah Parsons for relatively seven-tenths of a season, can create that sort of flexibility and freedom that allows Chop Robinson to be a jack-of-all-trades pass rusher and move him around, I think he could have a good season. Now, the biggest issue with Chop Robinson is, can he set the edge? And he's put on about 8 pounds. He's up to 255 to do a better job setting the edge. And it'll be interesting to see. I think we saw a lot of growth and gains from him during the OTAs. He was absolutely beating up on which was the offensive lineman? He was beating up on, I can't remember what the offensive lineman's
just
name
keep
is.
Keep going. Keep going.
Yeah, but he did well. Malik Washington's another one. I think he's probably going to be the favorite target for Malik Willis. He's a good slot receiver. He's probably going to be the starting flanker. Greg Dulcich, we saw what the promise that he had at tight end last season. I definitely tell anybody in fantasy football, Greg Dulcich should be your sleeper pick. So when you go to Montreal and you make your drafts, definitely take Greg Dulcich a little. And I didn't say make him your first tight end, but you definitely want him on your roster. Jonas Avenia, there's nowhere to go but up for him. If you think about how bad he played last season, he was rated as the worst guard in the NFL by Pro Football Focus. These things happen to rookies. They believe that moving him from the left side to the right side will help him settle down. The right side is primarily the side that he played on in college. So it'll be interesting to see his growth and development. I'm not sold on him as a player, but if he becomes decent, you've got a chance to put together a good offensive line. Then we got the defensive linemen, Kenneth Grant and Jordan Phillips. Both of those guys started majority of last season. Did not necessarily play that great. They were hot and cold, but we have seen Kenneth Grant lose a little bit of weight, and Jordan Phillips has been a workout warrior. He is physically sculpted. He's one of the hardest workers on the team. I definitely think if there's one player that I could tell you is having a Patrick Paul-esque jump, it would be him and his fellow Maryland teammate, Dante Trader Jr., who's probably going to be the bookend of that safety unit. I mean, he is absolutely going to be the leader of the secondary. Hopefully he can have a healthy training camp, which is not what he had last season. Then we get to the cornerbacks, Juju Brents, Jason Marshall, Ethan Bonner. To me, outside of Chris Williams, those are your top three cornerbacks, especially with Storm Duck probably beginning training camp on the PUP. Those guys have to be reliable and good. Otherwise, you're going to have to go out and you're going to have to go get a Jack Jones type cornerback to sort of patch the unit. And then we got an unknown guy in David Ojabo. He is a former second round pick of the Baltimore Ravens, and every time he got a chance to play, he got injured. So this guy's probably got less than 300 snaps as a former second round pick of an organization that is very good at talent evaluation. This is going to be his second chance at putting together a respectable career. The Dolphins definitely need edge setters, and hopefully he can step up and provide that kind of presence for Miami.
All right, there's Omar's list. You can check more of Omar's work in the Miami Herald. We are going to jump into some hoops when we start the 9 o'clock hour here, Omar. The Heat making some moves yesterday. I like the moves that they made. Ryan Conwell is a good player out of Louisville. They bring in Trey Donaldson out of Miami. So a couple of guys that have a lot of college experience, the two top senior scorers in the ACC last year. So I think this is a pretty good move here by the Heat to get some guys that perhaps you can plug in and play right away because they have all that experience. But we will talk to Ira Winderman about that. And, of course, the Heat needing to fill up the rest of this roster as well, right? Giannis is here. Bam is here. But who else is going to fill out this roster for Miami? We'll get some names from Ira Winderman when we come back. The 9 o'clock hour is next on QAM. Welcome back in here on WQAM. We'll get you a stock market report here brought to you by Anajar and Levine Accident Attorneys. Call 1-800-747-FREE. That's 1-800-747-3733. Another disaster looks like here in the stock market today. Everything is very, very red as our retirement accounts, I think, are starting to bleed out here, Omar. NASDAQ down 260 points, Dow down 220, and the S&P down another 50. Not great, not ideal. And if you're a Bitcoin person, that's not going so well either. So the tough times out there, Omar. So hopefully that'll bounce back at some point here. We're going to try to bounce back this weekend, Omar, with a strong column from you in the Miami Herald. And we want people to subscribe to the Herald so they can catch Omar's work here. I think it's a very interesting topic, Omar, that you have brewing here, and you know which Dolphins players need to make a jump, need to step up for this team. And
it's not need to make a jump, it's they can possibly make a jump.
Okay.
I mean, Chop Robinson has the talent to be a double digit sack producer. Mm-hmm. That's not the concern. The concern is, can Chop set the edge and be an every down defensive end? I mean, the athleticism is there. We've seen it in his rookie season. He was, you know, he had a ridiculous amount of pressures, wasn't delivering sacks, mm-hmm. but the pressures are a great indicator. So we know Chop has talent. Another example of this is Juju Brents. You saw, as a Dolphin fan, a 2-game sample size of Juju Brents as a starter, and it was probably some of the best cornerback play that we've seen since probably Xavier Howard. It was some good cornerback play, and Rasul Douglas was a very good cornerback as well. Mm-hmm. But when Juju was out there, he was showing you some movement skills. He was looked like a praying mantis. He's got length, he's got size, he's got movement skills. The problem is Juju Brents can't stay healthy. That's the reason why the Indianapolis Colts cut him. That's the reason he's battled injuries his entire career in the profession. If you look at his body, he's wiry thin. Well, that makes you susceptible to injury. Juju has to find a way and a program that's going to lead to him staying healthy and staying on the field. And then Jonas Savanaya. Last year, Jonas Savanaya started every single game, was rated the worst offensive guard in the entire NFL by Pro Football Focus.
That's not
and
good.
And you saw it. It wasn't like he was a disaster every play, but he had what I call the Dallas Thomas disease, where he basically gave you three plays where it was just going to be a disaster. And those three plays destroy drives. He's got to become more consistent and cut those plays out. The thought is that moving him to the right side is going to help him. But, you know, based on what I was told by his teammates, it's really a fundamental issue. He came in improperly coached at Arizona, mm-hmm. and they had a ton of things that they had to clean up in his game. Now, the question is, can he make that Patrick Paul leap? Patrick Paul wasn't a polished player his first year. He had some technical stuff that he had to work out. And he really grinded in the offseason, transformed his body, and transformed his game. Can Jonas Avenia do that as well?
Do you believe, Omar, that the jump from year one to year two is the biggest slash most important jump that a player needs to make? Or is it later in the career? Is it year two to year three? Like, how many years do you want a guy to essentially play like a younger type of rookie type player before he makes that jump? Like, what is the big year for a guy to make a jump from what you've seen in your career covering the
league?
It really
depends on how much playing time they invest in you in that first year. Give you a perfect example. I expect Jordan Phillips and Kenneth Grant to be a lot better because they invested 500 playing snaps in them. I expect Dante Trader to be a lot better in year two because they invested 500 playing snaps in them. Mm-hmm. I can't say the same thing about Ollie Gordon because the same amount of snaps wasn't invested into him. I think that the best indicator of a professional, how good a player is going to be, is that where Chop Robinson is right now, going from year two to year three. Chop is the runway is clear. Chop is going to have an opportunity to show us who he is and what he can become. The film is out on him. He knows that the reputation is that he can't set the edge. So that means every NFL team is going to be running at him. That's going to be part of their game plan. Well, if you can't address it now, when will you ever be able to address it? It's not going to be experience that makes you better at it. We'll see who Chop is as a professional this season. I could say the same thing about Patrick Paul. I think you're going to see him take another step forward, another step up. I saw flashes of elite dominance last year. I think that he is going to be one of the premier left tackles in this league. And if he has a strong season this year, we're talking about $100 million contract. And so if I'm dangling $100 million in your face, I would think that would motivate you to really lock in and get the job done. So it'll be interesting to see. I think Malik Washington's another one. Malik's got a significant snap load the first 2 years of his career. He's seen what defenses are trying to do to him. Yes, he's learning a new offense, but Malik is going to show us what kind of receiver he is. Is he a fringe NFL starter? Is he a starting flanker? Is he slot only? Is he a return specialist? I could tell you that I don't know the answer to that question. Last year, based on what he did on the field, he's only a return specialist for me. And he's a fourth or fifth receiver on the roster. But he's going to have a great opportunity right now because, as I said, the runway is clear for him to become an NFL starter and a mainstay in the offense.
Omar, for me, and I'm curious what you think too, like, this season is so much more intriguing than anything, any storyline from last season, right? Like,
there's a lot of intrigue. That's ridiculous. That is absolutely unequivocally ridiculous.
Why is that?
You had no expectations for this team. You have zero. You just have a lot of question marks that you want answered.
But doesn't that make it interesting? Interesting. Last season to me was
the
standard.
Last season was playoffs, right?
No, it wasn't. No, it was never. Last season to me was we are just too lazy to do the rebuild now. We're going to give these guys another shot and run it back and actually run it back with a worse roster than you had the year before. So there was no intrigue going into last season. It was just a wasted year of our lives. At least this year, it's year one of a rebuild.
How many years I've wasted in my life covering the Dolphins?
25. At least this year, it's a rebuild, though. Like, there's something to at least be intrigued by and excited over. Like, it may not result in wins. That's understandable, but at least there's something to watch
for. Give me your top five of things you want to see happen with this intrigue
top
that
five.
You have. Yeah. Because you're like, oh man, there's so much mystery and so much intrigue. Like,
one thing, Omar. I wasn't the leader of the Tua fan club last year like you were. I believed that Tua was cooked going into last year. I saw enough of Tua to make my judgment on him as a player. Apparently did not, because you get lost in numbers and nonsense and whatever. We have a quarterback this year that I think nobody has any idea if he can play.
That is correct.
So that is very intriguing
in and of including itself. People who gave him $45 million.
Well, they should know. I mean, I'm hoping they know to an extent. I'm hoping they don't come out one day and you're like, well, you know, we just kind of gambled on it. It was really a who knows 50-50 kind of thing. We just took a shot.
I mean, what else? That is exactly what they
did. It's an expensive flyer, all right? You know, you take a flyer on a guy, you throw like a late pick or like a few bucks at him. Like, this would be an expensive flyer to take on a quarterback.
Steve Ross didn't even recognize $45 million. So,
yeah, but the Bills are adding up for Stephen Ross.
Yeah.
It's starting to get expensive over there, Omar. He's got to pay another quarterback, meanwhile. The guy starting in Atlanta, he's got to pay that guy.
He'll sell another percent of his franchise. Listen, Steve Ross is fine. Money is not an issue. I once asked Steve Ross, I tell this story all the time. I once asked Steve Ross about the purchase of the W Hotel, which I think he paid $55 million for. Iconic hotel in Fort Lauderdale.
No, I understand that he's a billionaire, Omar. I'm aware.
Yeah. No. But the man basically acted like, hey, it was a buy one, get one free shoe. I just said, why not? Like, trust me, I've realized anything under $100 million, Steve Ross doesn't even recognize.
Okay. Well, he paid two or more than $100 million, right?
I mean, yeah.
He paid him $200 million to go play at another team. So well, I'm he's guessing only, he's not thrilled about
54
that.
He's this year. Okay, he's only paying
54 this year. But you don't maintain your wealth by paying, you know, undersized, unathletic quarterbacks to go play in other markets.
Hey, he could have stayed here and been the Dolphins starter, but you, as a fan and as a media wrangler, you basically determined that Tua was not welcomed here anymore. So Steve Ross took care of that for you.
I don't consider myself one of these media people, by the way. We put on a very hack.
You're on the biggest. You're on the biggest
hack radio show in the morning where we just throw stuff at a wall and see what sticks.
You're on the biggest sports show in the market, and you don't think your opinion has any weight, right?
I don't think my opinion had any weight when it came to getting rid of Tua.
Oh no, it did. Sorry,
I don't think it did, but nevertheless. I actually know that it didn't, Omar. I think the guys that took those jobs, those high-paid, you know, GM and all those jobs over there, I think they knew coming in that they did not want to roll with
sense.
Tua.
Financially, it didn't make sense to get rid of Tua. However, the fan base wanted something fresh and new, and Tua's probably going to go to Atlanta.
This decision had nothing to do with the fan base. The fan base wanted Reuben Bain. How did that work out for them? Why would you think that they listened to the fan base? As far as player personnel moves,
Why is it smart to pay Tua $54 million to go away and be a starter for the Atlanta Falcons and probably have a productive season?
Because
why is that good business?
Thank you, Fish Out of Water just thanked me for getting rid of Tua. I you know what? If Omar wants me to take the credit, I'll take the credit.
You're part
nuts.
Of the response.
You realize you're nuts.
You are what they call an influencer, young man. And your influence led to the banishment of Tua and Steve Ross eating $54 million.
If anybody over there took what I said about Tua to heart or even considered it, then they should not be doing that job.
Yeah, John Heffley and Eric Sullivan were in Green Bay. I doubt they were tuning in on the Odyssey app to the Joe Rowe show being like, ooh.
It's about the fan sentiment.
Man. Maybe they did stream the show.
It's really about the fan sentiment and the fact that Tua was not welcomed back here by his fan base.
So John Eric Sullivan and Jeff Hafley had a powwow with the fans and got a consensus from them?
The consensus was already here when they took the job.
But I mean this.
You act like, would Tua have been welcomed? If you would have $13 million more in cap space right now, just having Tua as the backup. Was Tua welcomed here as the backup?
Oh, no.
He was not. I'm
not arguing that.
And anytime I came on the Joe Rose show and said, it's financially beneficial for you to keep him, you guys said, cannot happen, will not happen, out of the question. You said so.
You know, we had a relatively good week, Omar, you and I together. And I feel like we've ended things on a very sour note here today with you saying first round picks don't matter. Now you're saying you're blaming me as one of the reasons that Tua's not
you're
here.
You're an influencer. Yes, you're a sports influencer.
If so.
You're part of the reason Giannis is here. You put the pressure on.
I did. Well, Giannis, I spoke to Giannis personally. And made sure that
This is what you do. You're Joe Rose's sidekick. Joe Rose has got the biggest voice in South Florida.
Joe does have a big voice. He has a very loud voice. And Joe will be back on Monday, by the way, for everyone that is wondering. He will be back with us on Monday. Omar.
You should have a birthday celebration on Monday for Joe.
I won't be here. Why don't you come in and do that?
I don't think
Joe wants to celebrate his like 73rd or 69th birthday or whatever it was. We'll throw him a big next milestone.
Friends would care enough to put together. Dan Day, how do you feel about this? Should we do a birthday celebration?
You know what,
Joe?
Though, Omar? I actually didn't, Dan. I didn't even text Joe on his birthday because he is out somewhere with his wife. I don't want to bother him. This was a week for him.
You could have said happy birthday.
Nope. I wanted him to completely enjoy himself. He will call me when he's in the airport. I know because he's gonna want to talk for an hour with me.
He's got sports talk buildup.
He's going to go on and on about Giannis, about Brady Tkachuk. He's gonna ask me what crazy bleep did Omar say this week, and I'm gonna have to tell him. Well, on Friday he said that first round picks don't matter, and then he also said that that the Dolphins front office is listening to our show and basing their decisions off of that.
Joe knows that.
All right,
Joe knows that.
Have a good weekend. Okay.
All right.
Goodbye.
I will.
Dan, thank you to you for driving the show all week. Jamie, Blake, hanging with us as well. I'm Hollywood. I won't be back on Monday. Joe will be back with you on Monday. Thank you to Omar Kelly. Sincerely, thank you, Omar. You are interesting, if nothing else. We're going to get some brisket at some point here. We'll do that. And the 999 challenge. We're going to do it all. We got a whole summer to kill, Omar. I'll have a great weekend. I'll talk to you on Monday. To just make people angry. I'm Hollywood. Omar Kelly is with us.
What'd I do today?
Your first round draft pick take is so just like,
It's
bizarre.
Let me give you a scenario.
Clarify it. Okay, go
ahead.
Let me give you a scenario.
You even got Dan Day riled up in there. He's a calm dude, and you got him riled
up.
Let's
fiery
look at
off
this.
That overnight empanada now.
Let's look at this not in a micro way. Let's look at it any way you want to look at it, Omar. 4 years from now, let's say Caden Proctor's a bust.
Okay.
4 years from now, if two of your receivers pan out and become solid NFL starters, and then all three of your linebackers, Trey Moore, the Kyle Lewis, and Jacob Rodriguez are your three starting linebackers, and you've got five starters from this draft, does it matter that Caden Proctor's a bust?
Yes.
The better
example.
Let me give you a good example. Omar's saying about it doesn't matter where you draft him as long as you hit on somebody. Look at the San Francisco 49ers. Years ago, they drafted Trey Lance to be their franchise quarterback. He turned out to be a bust, but Mr. Irrelevant Brock Purdy ended up being your franchise quarterback. So if you go into the draft, say, we got to get our franchise quarterback, doesn't matter whether you draft him fifth overall or Mr. Irrelevant, you still hit on your franchise quarterback. That's what Omar's saying.
I understand what he's saying. What he's saying is that as long as you hit on some of your picks, it's good. Like he wants a high percentage of hit rate. But the first pick, the guy was, what was he, the 12th pick in the draft? Like he's supposed to be.
He's got a 33% chance of busting like every other first round
pick. I'm sure
he
does, but like he's still Omar. Like I don't want to just say, oh, if he's a bust, oh, whatever.
33% of every draft pick is a bust. No matter. And that's a first round. And the percentage goes even lower per round. As long as you hit and you walk away from a draft with three established proven stars, I'm not even talking about starters, not even superstars, you've had a good draft. I can tell you, Lewis Moore, an undrafted safety from Indiana, has just as much of an opportunity, if not better, than Michael Taft, the guy that they drafted from Texas. Lewis Moore made more plays than him in the offseason program. If Lewis Moore starts and Michael Taft doesn't, who cares?
You stop at the offseason program. The guy made a few more plays than you and I did during the offseason program, okay? They're running around out there in shorts. Let's not do the offseason program thing, okay?
It's a sample size that we have. But my point is, same thing with Cader Cohu.
I understand your point. You're a numbers guy.
Cader Cohu was it part of the same class as Cam Smith. Cam Smith was a bust.
Okay.
Okay. Bad look for Chris Greer. But you did walk away in that draft, in that rookie class, with a rookie starting nickel in Kader Cole, who turned out to be a pretty good player. He got injured last year. We didn't get to see him, and he left because it's a new regime. But I still believe that Kader Cole's still a good player. He's going to get a chance to show that in Kansas City. Okay, it's a bad look that Camp Smith busted. But did you have players from that? No, not really. But but you did find a cornerback who gave you what Cam Smith should have given you. Now, is it ideal that your first round picks or second round picks or early draft picks bust? No. And yes, that's been part of the problem that we've had here in this organization.
Thank you. I was just about to say that's why we're in the situation that we're in, Omar.
Because
it's not about you know, oh, we got a starter late in the draft, so it doesn't matter that we took Deion
David
Jordan.
David Ojabo, who will probably be in the running to be a starter here for the Dolphins, he was a bust for the Baltimore Ravens, the best drafting organization. It was a second-round bust.
Everyone has busts. I completely understand.
That's my point. Everybody has busts.
I understand. But you act like it's like, oh, they blew the 12th pick. No biggie. Like,
it is no biggie. It will ultimately be
no
biggie.
No, stop saying that. Stop saying that, because that's not true. You need this guy to be a Pro Bowler. You need him to be a Pro Bowl caliber player.
I'm not talking about a late pick in the draft
who ends up being a starter on a mediocre team that the Dolphins have been for 25 years. I'm talking about you need Pro Bowl caliber players.
So I need every first round pick that the Dolphins draft in the next 6 years during this regime to be a Pro Bowl player is what you're telling me.
If they're picking at 12, yeah, it'd be nice. I mean, it'd be nice to get a guy who's a really good player at that spot.
I think if
I mean,
you go
Omar,
through
draft, there were some really good players that got picked right around that pick. Like the safety
Devon
we're talking
Achane
about,
is the
like
best, Devon Achane is the best talent in his draft class.
Devon Achane's a running back.
That includes Patrick Paul. Okay, who cares where he was drafted?
People don't. Running backs are. It's very rare you take a running back high. I know that
two teams just took a running back high the last 2 years, and they're doing well. Detroit took a running back high. He's one of the best in the draft. Atlanta took a running back high. He's one of the best in the draft. And Devon Achane is comparable to all of them. And he was not drafted in the first round. Stop making this obsession about where a guy is drafted or how high of a resource that you use. 33% of your first-round picks, including Fernando Mendoza, have a chance to be bust.
Absolutely.
That's just the reality of it.
I feel like two things can be true, though. Like, yes, you can hit on your late-round picks, but, like, you think the 49ers aren't kicking themselves for not taking Jamar Chase or Penei Sewell or Pat Surtain over Trey Lance?
They don't care. You know why they don't care?
They absolutely care.
No, they do. They don't care because ultimately, a quarterback who's the last pick in the draft beat him out and is a franchise quarterback, and they got a franchise quarterback, and they're lucky to have a franchise quarterback. The Dolphins wish they had a franchise quarterback. So yeah, you traded more assets to go get the guy who busted. But is it stopping you from being a good franchise? The 49ers are still a good franchise. And you know why? Because they got a franchise quarterback. And he just so happened to be the last pick in the draft.
But imagine
if it was the second overall pick or the last pick in the draft.
Omar's winning. As long as you got it, you got it. Omar's winning right now. He's baiting us in. And Omar has paid bashers on here on this YouTube stream. This guy with the 305 in his thing.
You've like hit the hornet's nest.
I think that this is
Joe has always hit.
I think this is a paid supporter that you have on here, Omar. I think that you are cutting this guy a check to tell you that these things that you just give you support this morning. How could you say that teams like the 49ers don't care that they blew that pick with all those great players that are out there?
Why are they thinking about it now?
Oh my goodness!
Why would they be thinking about it now?
I don't know. I just happen to think it's a big deal that you hit on your number 12 pick. Like, to me, that's a pick that you spent.
Are they one of the eight teams that are consistently competing for the Super Bowl the last couple of years?
The 49ers?
Yes.
I think the 49ers could badly use a weapon like the names we just rattled off there.
Okay.
And they lucked ass backwards into a quarterback. So, you know, that kind of was a lucky break there. And I don't even think Brock Purdy's that good.
And they lost multiple years of draft capital by trading up.
That's true. And has it stopped them from being a good team? The Rams, they've consistently traded away their draft picks.
The Rams are not a good comparison. The Rams are loaded.
A good team.
Well, that's a different story. They got Myles Garrett for those first round picks.
Oh, okay. And the Dolphins did that with Tyreek Hill and Jalen Ramsey and whatever, whatnot. It's not about what you do with it. It's about the talent that you have, player development. If you have player development, I don't care where you draft the player. If they're going to consistently get better under your coaching staff, that's where the focus needs to be, not how high you draft the guy. I don't want a top five pick. I don't want the Dolphins to suck to have a top five pick. You know why?
Because the pick doesn't matter.
The pick doesn't matter. If you're not good at talent evaluation and you're not good at player development, the pick doesn't matter anyway.
So mathematically and theoretically, we should trade back every single draft.
Yeah, the good teams do.
Okay.
You realize you're going to kill Joe, right, at some point with this stuff. Like, I can handle your antics.
There were years on this team where two undrafted players were the best players on the Dolphins team.
That's not good, though. But that's not good. The Dolphins are not a good team. The Dolphins are bad. The Dolphins are mediocre at best. They've been for 25 years.
They've been mediocre at best for 25 years because they don't have a franchise quarterback and because they are insistent that quarterbacks never have to compete here.
They've drafted the wrong quarterback twice.
They drafted Ryan Tannehill
and Tua. They drafted the wrong quarterback twice.
That's talent evaluation and talent development. That's not the draft pick.
What?
That's not where these quarterbacks were drafted. Hell,
there was a quarterback that went one pick after Tua. One pick after Tua. That's 10 times the player he is.
We could have Justin Herbert, and he could have panned out just like Tua did with bad player development and the bad weaponry around. It's not about where they're taken. It's about what you do with them when they're here and who develops and who doesn't. Justin Herbert hasn't even panned out and developed into the stud that a lot of people think he is. People are still living off potential. He still hasn't even won a playoff game. Him and Tua have the exact same amount of playoff wins. But he's such a stud. Okay, let's see how he develops.
Chris Greer should have hired you to be his number two, and you guys could have taken the mentality that the first round pick doesn't matter. We got to get to the 8 o'clock hour. We're gonna take a pause. We'll try to calm down here. Very riled up here with Omar and his first round pick take here on QAM. I know that people are craving Dolphins content, Omar.
Yeah,
and you are forced to deliver.
It's really a column that you guys inspired this week talking about it. You know, a lot of people want to say the Dolphins are going to suck. The Dolphins are going to win four games. Mm-hmm. You know, the betting line is 4.5. And that's because there's a lot of unknowns about this team, because there's a lot of young players that will have an opportunity to cement themselves as NFL starters. The runway is clear for young players to show that they can be future NFL stars. We're talking about the Chop Robinsons of the world, the Malik Washingtons, and the column's really about, you know, if the Dolphins get, I would say there's about 12 players who will have the opportunity to get a come up. And if that come up is in the Patrick Paul realm of improvement, in terms of a guy going from a question mark to a pillar in one season, Dolphins should be able to produce a winning season. If Malik Willis does it, if Chop Robinson does it, if Jonas Savanaya does it, if Juju Brents does it, I would rather have the amount of guys have the come up. If seven guys have the come up and the Dolphins have six wins, the season is a success for me, because you have more guys showing that they can be NFL pillars for this team than you have wins. I think that's a great formula that I want to create for the expectation for 2026.
And for me, I know I've told you, it's like wins and losses is not what you can – is not the storyline of this season, right? Like, it's year one of a rebuild, so I understand why people that cover the league as a whole, you know, and look from, you know, from afar or whatever, like, I understand why they think the Dolphins are going to be one of the worst teams in the league. It makes perfect sense, right? They have a lot of unknowns, as you mentioned, Omar, but they are also in year one of a massive rebuild. right? So it is going to take time to turn this thing around. For me, this is not about wins and losses. It's about, you know, how does Malik Willis play? Does he show you flashes? I don't care about his numbers. I just want to see that he, you know, shows you plays here, plays there. Like, oh, you say, okay, this guy gets it. Like, he can play the position. We have the guy at quarterback. We have the guy that, you know, our new staff, coach and GM, both wanted here. Right, it was a big deal for them to get this guy here, and it seemed like Omar was something that they had planned well in advance to bring him here. Right, it wasn't some last minute, oh, we'll just take him because he's there. This was this was something that they went out and got. They drafted a guy on the offensive line in the first round with a stud from the University of Miami on the board. So there's some major intrigue here to this season, and to me, it starts with your first pick and your quarterback. Right. And those guys and how well they can play. But that first pick thing is going to be very interesting to watch, too, because I know there are a lot of Canes fans that are still not happy that Ruben is in Tampa, not here.
Yeah, I'm in that category. I'm very curious to see what Ruben Bain does. I think kind of my expectations are, you know, Proctor needs to be at least 14-game starter. Let's hope Ruben Bain is a 14-game starter. You know, if Ruben Bain delivers double-digit sacks and helps lead probably a top 15 defense, and, you know, he's a consistent edge rusher and edge setter, then and the Dolphins don't have an edge rusher and edge setter, I'm going to wonder if leadership is the right fit for here, because the last thing I can afford or the last thing I want from this organization is for them to consistently keep missing on hurricanes that people in this market think will be impact players in the league.
Here's the thing, Omar, and as I sit here in my hurricane sweater, you know how I feel about that program down there, okay?
Yeah.
I don't try to hide that. Like, I do the pregame show for football. I do the basketball games with Josie. Like, I care a lot about it. At the same time, you can't just draft Hurricanes players because they're Hurricanes players. Like, you know, you can't do that.
That's not what I'm saying.
Right? I'm saying it. Like, you can't just like, oh, they play down here, they're fan favorites. Like, you can't approach it that way. Now, with that being said, if this pick doesn't go well, this would be a massive disaster. And for more reasons than Ruben is 4 hours up the road in Tampa. So, yes, that would be a problem. That would just add on to me. That would add on to the problem, because I know Ruben is going to be a productive NFL player. I don't think there's like too much debate on that. Right. I don't know if he's going to be the best ever, but I think that at the very least he will be productive. If this doesn't go well, like, let's say this guy shows up to camp and he's overweight. Let's say he's unhealthy. Let's say any of these problems pop up. These guys from Green Bay that came down here, took over, they stuck their neck out for this guy, right? They put all their chips on the table. This was a big pick.
Hold on. He would have been drafted in the next two or three picks. He would have been drafted
I don't care who would have drafted him. We did. He would have gone.
And we chose him over a safety. A lot of people think it's going to be the rookie of the year.
Yes.
We chose him over Ruben Bain, who is a fan favorite here. Yeah, this is territory.
This was not a difficult
decision making of leadership.
This didn't seem like an overly difficult pick. Okay, there were a lot of good names on the board. A lot of guys that I imagine are going to be productive NFL players. I'm not saying he's got to be the MVP, but you know, he's got to be a starter. He's got to be a starter talent right away.
He's going to be a starter.
Going to be a starter, but I mean an actual starter. Like, he's got to show, like, hey, you know, he has to show that he can play. I think your quarterback needs to show that he can play, because if these guys missed on either one of those two, those are going to be really costly misses.
Okay, and then we just start over next year and try to figure out a better spot. Oh, we tell you that Caden Proctor should have been playing right tackle, just like we tell you Jonas Avenia should have been playing right guard.
Joe, and I'm sitting in Joe's chair here this morning, but Omar, we're all running out of years. okay, to just redo. Okay, we can't just keep getting do-overs.
You got about 25 left in you, 30?
Well, we'll see, man. We'll see. I just ate we had empanadas sitting out overnight that Dan Day swore by. I ate one of those this morning, so I just took at least a year off my life.
We'll see at about 9 o'clock how that thing attacks you.
If I'm not here, it's because I ate an empanada that sat out overnight in our building. But Omar, look, again, we are running out of time, man. We can't just keep, I'm being serious, we can't just keep saying we're going to do it over next year if we miss.
How quickly did you expect to get to 12 wins in this rebuild? Give me a timetable.
I would say 3 years. Okay. Realistically, three years.
I think you can be patient for 3 years. And
yeah, but missing on your top pick is not going to help the process. That sets you back drastically, Omar.
Okay, and if they miss on their top pick, I have the same argument with Joe all the time. I don't care about the top pick. I don't want to go down that road with you.
That is so insane to say that. I jump out of my seat every time I hear you say it to Joe. We got to take a pause here before everyone gets riled up here on this beautiful football Friday. You have to hit on your top picks, man.
You don't.
Okay.
That's how winning franchises.
That's how they get over the hump, by blowing top 10 picks. We're gonna take a pause. We'll be back on QAM after this.